I think the best kind of marketing is helping somebody when they're in that stage of not ready to buy, which could be for a myriad of reasons, right? But you take them on this journey of, here's how you do this thing. I'll walk you through it. I'll give you everything I know. Eventually, when they're ready to buy, they're thinking of you first.
For years, marketing has been built around one idea: get the click. But what if that's not what actually drives growth anymore? Today, we're talking too loud with Amanda Natividad about zero-click marketing. This idea that your content should create impact without relying on a click. Because the internet has changed. People aren't leaving platforms the way that they used to. And the things that actually drive demand, trust, recall, preference, they don't always show up in your analytics. So if you're a marketer trying to figure out what's actually driving demand for your brand and how to create content people remember, not just click, this episode is for you. Amanda, so good to have you here. So nice to meet you.
So great to meet you. We're doing it.
We're really doing it. And I'm excited to talk loud with you about zero-click marketing. And that's something I know you're writing a book about, you explore about on your podcast. I've read many posts from you that have been very enlightening. You guys were very early on something that is affecting all of us who are marketing every day. And so I'm super excited to have you here and like to dig deep in on this. And it is, zero-click marketing is pretty different from what we were really taught. When you think of any of us who are professionally taught marketing or those of us who just consumed it all online and learned. So I kind of want to start with the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'd love if you could describe zero-click marketing and why is this happening? What is this big shift?
Yeah. So I'll kind of say the problem first and then what zero-click marketing is. So basically the thesis of this is the internet has changed from, you know, it being this click-through environment where we could track everything to an in-platform consumption environment. But most marketers are still using that sort of click-first mental model. So effectively, we are now marketing for an attention economy in which platforms keep people inside the walled gardens, outbound links are throttled, and so the better move is to meet your audience where they already are. And so zero-click marketing is about creating that real value where your audience already spends time. So in their feeds, inboxes, search results, communities, podcasts, and now that, you know, AI interfaces. So the click still matters, but it's increasingly the result of influence, not the only signal that influence happened. So if you only optimize for clicks, you will certainly undercount what's working and overreward what's easiest to track.
So what should you optimize for instead if you're not optimizing for clicks?
I mean, you optimize for the influence, right? Figure out how you can get people to know who you are, remember you, well, understand you, remember you, like you, and then search for you when they're ready. And so when I talk about this, I say like, there are ways we can measure this stuff, right? Like, you can look at things like your social media analytics, and that would just be to see like, okay, the content we're posting on social media, do people like it? Are they engaging with it? But then you can also look at things like branded search, like lift in branded search over time. And then maybe if you are, I guess this might not work for every team. It works really well for us at SparkToro. But at SparkToro, when we see like bumps in signups or people who are, you know, becoming customers of our tool, it's relatively easy for us to track, well, what happened in the days leading up to that. And so my colleague, Rand Fishkin, and I can just look in our Google Analytics and say, oh, Rand actually, you know, he spoke at like three conferences that week. That's probably why this happened. So I think having that kind of tight alignment too amongst your marketing team will help you be able to trace back what's working and what isn't. Now, I don't know if it's like, okay, for sure, you know, because of Rand's keynotes, we got 300 signups. We got 210. I don't know, right? But what I do know is, well, we got a bump in signups. People are searching for us. In Google Search Console, they're searching for Rand's name and, you know, the content or the keywords related to what he talked about. You know, so those are things that show like, okay, this matters. It's making an impact. I don't know the dollar for dollar, you know, ROI, but it's working.
how do you think people should think about this who have like a paid campaigns going too? And do you guys have a bunch of paid campaigns alongside a lot of the organic work that you're doing? And like, how do you pull those apart?
We don't. So we don't have any marketing budget for that. Like our marketing budget is tools, my salary, rent salary, you know,
wow.
Yeah. So we don't do any paid, but I will say, I guess caveat, I don't have super tactical yesterday experience in some of these paid tools. But what I would say, and I think most performance marketers would agree, is when your organic content, like organic activity engagement is doing well, it helps the paid side be a little bit more efficient or economical.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's making me think of a moment that I've talked about a lot at Wistia. It was like a big moment for us. Mm-hmm. But when we first had a video, it was on site back then, but like just completely take off, get tons of organic sharing on social media. And it was like a behind the scenes video of who worked at Wistia. It was like when there's six of us, there's nothing in this video except like us just like sitting there, like looking like we're working, you know, it was like so stupid. And we were so embarrassed by it, but it went viral, I think, because it was like this, like so unique for the time to show tiny startup, crappy office, like here we are. And it drove a bunch of traffic. And then we watched and there were some signups, but it's hard to see the signups that came directly from that traffic. Mm-hmm. But this bump in brand continued for like a few days. And people searching for Wistia went way up. And then we had a 2-week trial back then. 2 weeks later, we got a ton of new customers. And I watched the moment occur of like people came in to see this behind the scenes team video. They had a connection to us. Then they figured out what we were.
Yeah.
And then they actually purchased. And it was like, oh, I'm seeing it happen. Even though there's a lot happening that can't be tracked. And it was one of those moments I think about a lot that like really impacted how we market here.
Yeah.
Where this like this trust that if you can create a great experience for somebody in one place, at the conference, at the booth, on social, in a video, on a podcast, that it can then actually, if it really worked, it'll show up in another way. But it's that link is has always been hard and is now basically impossible to see.
Yeah, that's a really good example too, because it wasn't viral for the sake of viral, right? It wasn't you all like trying to glom onto some trend that was already happening. It was this thing you were doing that was related to your company, maybe not directly related to what you sell, right? But it was adjacent, but it took off. People liked it. It helped you get remembered and people sought you out later. And that's probably one of those things that at the time it was like, oh, it's going viral. Cool. I don't know what's going to happen. Right.
Like,
it's
we had no idea. Yeah. Right. It was very shocking.
Yeah.
It was one of those things you just don't expect to occur.
Yeah.
And it was also just the like this reminder, which I think about a lot now with all of the AIification stuff of like the humans are getting more important, not less. Mm-hmm. And so if you can create that connection with somebody, then like that impact can be so real. And it can actually dictate how someone spends their time and what they pay attention to. Let's go deeper on like what that looks like with zero-click marketing. Like, can you give us an example of it can be from you all of something that you've done recently that you're like, yes, this is, I think if people can replicate this, like they can wrap their minds around this and they can make it happen.
Ooh, yeah. So let me think. I have a couple of different examples that come to mind. So I don't tend to think about things, and maybe this is to my detriment. We'll see what I'm about to say. I don't know what I'm going to say. No, I mean,
that's how it should always be.
What I'm about to say, I don't know what I'm going to say.
I literally don't know what words are coming out of my mouth, but I trust myself. And so get ready, world.
Oh my God, that was amazing.
Okay, so I was going to say, I don't tend to think about things as B2B versus B2C. I think about things in categories and industries. So the way I think about zero click marketing is, okay, let's say you're marketing in the use case of we are a product in an existing category and we have a lot of competitors, right? It would be like, you know, Lyft versus Uber, where it's basically the same thing. And so you have a lot of competition. So I think what you do there, a key play is, well, what's unique about you? It's probably your perspective, right? Like, actually, using Uber and Lyft as the example, they are the same product. But something that's very different about them is Uber has always been about how do we bring things to people? Like food, bringing people to other people, right?
Packages, but like, right.
All like, delivery. Yeah. But Lyft, and maybe this has changed in recent years, but Lyft had always been about how do you bring people to places? So Uber was, how do we bring things to people? Lyft was, how do we bring people to places? And I think for a little while, that was their differentiator in some of their like secondary or tertiary markets, right? Where like Uber was like all in on Uber Eats, like food delivery. But Lyft for a time was trying to do like HIPAA compliant rides for patients going to hospitals for their appointment. Right? Those are very different sorts of things. And they're very different in terms of like the perspective, the mission, the messaging. So all that to say is a kind of weird example of when you are in a highly competitive market, think about what's different about your point of view. Maybe you could have a contrarian take, a lesser known opinion, original data, stuff like that.
Can we actually, I want to go a little further there.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's more having the contrarian take or the different perspective and that should be all like offsite in your zero click marketing or also in the actual product on your website as well? Like, do you think those should be different or the same or how do you think about that?
Oh, wait. Can you ask it again?
Sure. When you have like a really strong opinion and it enters into your marketing, do you think that that strong opinion should be everywhere, like on your website, on your social content, in your ads, or should it be different in different places? And what I mean by that is like your website be like, well, this is just our product and it's, you know, I'm putting our product forward without as much of a perspective. But like the way I talk about it when it's me on LinkedIn is in a very opinionated way. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. No one's ever asked me that. I think it would be, I think in an ideal world, yes, it's consistent. And it doesn't have to be consistent in the same like word for word, like copy and paste thing. If it happens to work for that situation, great, right? But I think it's, how do you go back to kind of the original, the ethos, the meaning behind that contrarian take, if it's a contrarian take, and how does that inform everything else? Because I do think it'd be really interesting if you have like the scope and the budget to test it across your homepage, all your social channels, all your paid campaigns, and you know, employee messaging. That would be really cool to see like, okay, how does this perform after we do this for like 2-3 whole months and then go back a few months from then and look to see if that worked. That would be super interesting. I think another thing you can do is if you have multiple contrarian, if you have a couple that you want to test, that's when a paid campaign can be really helpful because you'll spend the money to get the impressions to see what's going to convert better. So like you could do that.
Yeah, I think there's just like, as you start thinking about what gains influence and what gains attention, I find that like, you know, if you're vanilla, it doesn't work. Like it can't work. You need something, right?
Yeah.
And then there's also, I feel like I see, and this is different by social channel, LinkedIn, you see this a little bit, X, it's only this. It's like utter chaos and people like saying like the craziest crap they could possibly say. But it does seem to work for some people that it's like, oh, wow, they're getting attention. What I always think about is like, I know they can't have those extreme takes on their actual company website. And they don't usually. Mm-hmm. And so is it not even working at all? Because like, yeah, you're getting attention in one place, but it's not the right type because it doesn't actually connect back to the customer.
Yeah.
And attention doesn't always mean influence. Attention doesn't always mean recall.
Yeah.
It doesn't always mean trust. So like, I guess my question to you, Amanda, is like, does zero click marketing have to check a lot of those boxes? Like, does it have to be attention and trust and recall? Or can you really like do the thing that like you see on Twitter where it's like, I would categorize that as like all attention. Mm-hmm. Like they're not really thinking about the other components as much.
Yeah. I think I would just say like, well, what attention do you want? Like, what do you think is going to happen as a result of this? Like, you know, it's the whole thing between, it's the difference between a spicy take and a spiky take. I like that. I'm stealing this from—
Spicy and spiky.
I have not heard this.
Oh, yeah. I'm stealing this from Wes Kao. Wes Kao, who, you know, co-founded Alt-MBA with Seth Godin, co-founded Maven. She has a thing called a spiky take. So a spiky take is basically a hill you're willing to die on. It's not hot take for the sake of ruffling feathers. It's It's no, I have a strong point of view and I will die on this hill defending it. Versus spicy take is just like hot take, like your content sucks, you know, where it's like you don't mean that.
Yeah, but you're like, it's like the stir the pot kind of content.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, the attention you're trying to garner is like, yeah, like spiciness. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm doing a face. I know, listeners, if you're listening, I'm making a really weird face with my eyeballs.
Yeah, she's like kind of moving her head around.
I'm bobbing my head.
Yeah. She's got her hand around her chin. Just for anyone listening.
This is reminding me of some content I saw on a social platform this morning where somebody was like, you know, those posts or people where you say like, comment, you know, your favorite emoji and I'll send you the playbook. Right. Yeah. You see a bunch of people commenting on it. And so this person was like, here's a really interesting use case for your like cold outbound. Like you can scrape all the people who left this comment, use Claude to blah, 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 blah. And then like do this and like, I don't know, like dry up four lakes just to find out to get it to pull up a list for you that would be like your warm outbound, which is, you know, whatever, environmental impact questions aside, it's interesting, right? Like, okay, that is a way to do something with the intention that you're getting. However, here's what I would push back is depending on what you're selling, right? Now, if you're slinging like $5 Notion templates, that's probably fine. But if you are Wistia, right, and you are selling an actual tool that you want companies, teams to get value out of, do you think any of those like heads of marketing who might be your ICP are going to comment like, oh, my fruit emoji, I want that playbook, right? So I question that, where like, depends on what kind of attention you want and from whom, because there's stuff like that where I think if you're marketing to heads of director, VP, they're not commenting to get free playbooks, especially in public, you know?
No, not in public. Right? Like, they might ask for it, but they're not letting anybody know they want a playbook. They're sliding into the DMs and saying, let me get a playbook. Yeah, but I think this is interesting because it's getting us to that point that I think that's like an obvious question if you're listening is, okay, so you're saying it's about attention and it's about recall and you're saying it's going to be hard to track. So how do you know if it's working? And what I'm hearing from you and what my experience has been similar is like, you basically have to have a lot more confidence that the inputs, the stuff that you're putting out there, mm-hmm. aligns really tightly to the things that your ICP is going to care about, right? Yeah. So it's like, I make a thing, I'm pretty sure my ICP is going to be into it. It's helpful, it's genuine, it's got research, it's got something about it that's got a very different take. And if a lot of people are engaging, then I have to trust the algorithm to get it to the right folks. And trust that the input was valuable, right? And is that how you think of, that's how I think about this, but is that how you also think about this?
Yeah, I do. I think about like that. The other thing I think about is, and I wish more companies, teams, I don't know, CEOs maybe thought of it this way, is I think a lot about how marketing sustains the business and how marketing sustains the business beyond just bringing in new customers and retaining existing customers. I think about how, what is the internal impact marketing can make to make some of the other departments in the company more sustainable? And this is, and I say this as somebody who is a content marketer who came up through like journalism and like thought leadership type of content, not so much SEO, where I've been like beating the drum of like, we have to have high quality stuff, you know, and colleagues, mm-hmm. team members would be like, what do you mean high quality? Like, that's so subjective. And I'm like, mm-hmm. no, it's, you need high quality stuff that people that you admire in your audience actually want to read, right? Like, there's a difference between trying to rank for like how to make a video and like being the first brand that people think of when they are thinking like, I need a really good video hosting tool that is going to cover all of my key needs as a business, but also be a good experience for my audience, right? Those are two different things. And so I went about this like, okay, if I want to have higher quality content, then this content needs to do more than just get some organic traffic, Like this mm-hmm. content needs to, I want to do some like help education oriented content. And I want the customer success team to be able to leverage the stuff. And so back when I worked at Fitbit B2B, a lot of what I did was a sort of like customer success enablement, product marketing enablement, sales enablement, where like I would do things like spend a whole month heads down just on case studies. And I would get these packaged up into PDFs so that I could go to sales and be like, here you go. Here's the book. If you want to drop this into your next meeting, there you go. And that's the kind of thing that you wouldn't really measure through traditional marketing metrics, right? Especially when it's a packaged PDF or a physical book. But it's the kind of thing that has an impact on another team, where sales can be like, great, this makes my job a little bit easier. Or customer success can be like, awesome, now I have some examples to look to when like my clients are asking me, like, how do I do this? I can point to this case study booklet. So I think about things as sustaining the business. And I think that's I feel like it's a healthier way to look at marketing, and especially content marketing, where it's kind of famous for being a little bit of a cost center and it's hard to get ROI from.
That's so interesting, because I feel like that happens. Like different teams do utilize marketing materials, mm-hmm. but I don't know that they, like, I don't even know if that, if someone would describe that as like a function of marketing. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, at least not in my mind, I think of marketing as being so external facing, even though it has like internal benefits as a byproduct. So it really does change how I think about marketing. And
yeah, you're talking about like basic, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is like, if you make amazing enablement, your confidence can help the sales team. And if you make amazing enablement that happens to be public for everyone, it's actually going to help a lot of other people. But just like with the sales team thing, they're usually not coming back saying like our close rate changed just because of this one enablement thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that trust that's really easy when it's like I'm handing it to a customer success manager who's going to bring it to a customer. Like they told me it went great. Like, oh, awesome. And for some reason, we don't trust it as much when we're putting it on LinkedIn. And yeah, we got 50,000 views. I was like, is that good? Like, I don't know. Like, is there enough comments on it? Who's commenting on it? Like, it's like judged differently mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah. What do you think of that? Like, as the CEO, right? Like if I'm telling you like, hey, I want to be judged on my job in part, you know, based on how my work is impacting the rest of the company. Like, do you like that?
Do I like it? No, I do like it.
And check the box, yes or no.
No, of course I do. And I think that the thing that I've noticed is like, you know, we have, there'll be times where we do like tons of enablement internally, and it's almost always, it's just very loud and clear that it comes through. It's like there's something on my desktop right now that is this, like, we call it like the spaghetti graph. And it shows all the different tools that people would have to use, like, to accomplish the same thing on the other side they can accomplish with Wistia. And the first time I saw this, I was like, this is awesome. Just so visceral. And then the sales team started using it in sales calls, and like, it's so great. The success team started using it. It's become this important thing. And I know it's important because these people that I trust who are at the company have told me. I think that, though, we judge a lot of marketing work really differently, just like mm-hmm. by default. And we have these very, very high expectations for it. And then if you were to take this graphic and put it on social, and it, let's say it got 20 likes and it said it had 2,000 views, I think people would probably look at it as like a failure, because our marketing numbers were so like anchored towards these big, massive, seeing everyone else's viral campaigns, you know? Yet, probably, if 2,000 people saw it and there were 20 comments and they're actually really engaged, like, I mean, how long would it take a CSM to have that many conversations? Like, it would take a while. And I think that that's more what I find interesting, is that we judge these things so differently.
Yeah.
And we should, to, you know, because like there is more scale you can have on the marketing side. But that's kind of what it makes me think about.
Yeah, yeah. And I do think it's fair, obviously, to judge these things differently. But I do wish more organizations looked at it this way. And the other thing I wish more people did, I wish more people were willing to share their benchmarks. You know, I always think about that too. Like, 2,000 impressions, is that good? I think about this now, I think in this time of like where organic engagement is just so important on social media, I'm always wondering, like, if my LinkedIn post gets 5,000 impressions, I'm like, is that good? I feel like it's not.
You know,
I want people to share with me.
I have the same exact... Because, right, you're like, okay, I don't, first of all, it's hard for humans to like really comprehend big numbers. Like we have a hard time doing that. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it's like, I find myself asking ChatGPT actually all the time. I'm like, what's like an average B2B podcast, like listenership? How many listeners? How many plays? How many minutes? What's the percentage of minutes that your average listener and viewer will consume? Because nobody puts this out there. Nobody puts it out there. So who knows if ChatGPT is right in what it's telling me. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree that there's not enough benchmarking. And it's so easy. I mean, also the other thing about zero-click marketing is I'm very sold on it, to say it. And it's because I've experienced it myself very directly, right? So like I'm posting all the time myself and I see, oh, shit, like the things I used to post and we'd link to Wistia, like, and it would always get, it doesn't work. It just doesn't get so... I've lived and breathed it to the point of like, I've internalized it so deeply that as CEO, it's like, I'm like, we must do this. Like this, we have to, like, we'd be crazy not to. But like, I have noticed a lot that what always convinces me and pushes me beyond is like in-person interactions where people will tell me funny things that they've seen that we've done. And that is almost for some reason, even though it's a really small number of people who I have these in-person interactions with, they are what stick in my mind. Where
well,
it's
that's
like,
recall, right? That's
exactly.
What it
but, it's
is.
Like, but it's like at my 20th college reunion, that's what it was last year. And I'm just like chatting with some people who were on my freshman hall and someone starts telling me about a recent episode of Talking Too Loud. And I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is crazy. And, but then of course, what they said like really stuck with me and they knew some other thing Wistia was doing. I was like, this shit's working. That's it. It was like, oh my God. It's like, and it happened yesterday. I was at a coffee shop with Brendan and ran into two people I hadn't seen in like since pre-COVID times. And they're like, oh yeah, we see on LinkedIn all the time. Saw this, that. The other thing is like this kind of that very small interaction fuels me tremendously on getting through the like change and what the numbers are on social.
That example is kind of perfect because I'm also totally bought in on zero-click marketing. It makes sense for the kind of world we're living in. It makes sense for like the platforms sort of wanting to keep you inside their own playground, like you identified. But I could hear someone saying to you, Chris, like, okay, I don't know what position they hold. Maybe they're the CFO. Okay, like you ran into Joe Schmo at the college reunion and he referenced an episode of Talking Too Loud. Is he a customer?
Yeah.
Right?
People like, did say this. So it's funny because like, I won't throw anybody specific under the bus, but I had a bunch of people who were like, what the hell are you doing with all this LinkedIn posting? And they're looking at the types of posts and they're like, is this going to move the needle? Like, is this useful?
Yeah.
And then the thing that pushed everyone over the edge was we used a few different tools and different things to like connect data together. We realized, oh, wait, a lot of the people who are engaging are people who are just recently purchased or end up being in the funnel. We also... changed how we thought about success in terms of like, and I think some of this came from the data that you and Rand shared, which was like, hey, the Google search that you're seeing is not all Google search. Like a lot of this is people coming from other platforms and then going directly in their browser bar to search. And so we started to ask, doing surveys of people sign up saying like, where'd you hear about us? And it turned out that when people told us where they heard about us, it's completely different than the rest of the data. And we're having an outsized impact from other things. And that, you go see people write down, I heard about you from Savage LinkedIn. I heard about you from Talking to that. I heard about you at this conference. You start thinking pretty differently. And that stopped a lot of that concern. But without that, I think it was still exactly what you're saying, Sylvie, is people just being like, is this worth it? Is it good? Like, do they show up?
Yeah. What do you say to that person, Amanda, who's like, well, are they a customer?
I mean, it depends, right? It depends on what you're selling, you know? Depends on who they know, because maybe that person isn't your customer or not your would-be customer, but maybe they would influence a potential other customer. Sometimes I also want to say, tell people, like, you know, I feel like worrying too much about, is this the right person? Is that going to move the needle? Is that going to do that? there's going to be a point of diminishing returns, you know, where like you might realize you spent all day tied up in analytics and spreadsheets and you have very little new knowledge gained that would materially change what you're doing anyway. So a little bit of my stance too is just like, can't you just do like what you think is right for your audience and your customers and then do the thing? I don't know. That's so unprofessional.
Can't you just like do it? do you know what you're doing or no?
Like, can't you just do your job and then like trust things? Like, I don't know.
It seems like that would be a lot easier to do at a smaller company versus like a bigger, lots of bureaucracy, lots of like proving things out.
I also do think that the whole like sustaining the business or that helps internally in bigger companies is, I mean, that's kind of my implicit playbook for corporate politics. You know, if you make sales happy, I mean,
you're good.
It's true, right? Like if sale hates marketing, that CMO's out next quarter, you know it. But if sales likes marketing gets to keep their jobs. That's kind of shitty to say, but it's true.
Well, it's like back to the like very concrete. If you could see it move the numbers and impact something there, then you can have the trust that it's, you know, you're doing good things elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I just find that it's also challenging because marketing, this zero click change, like you've been talking about it for, I feel like 3 or 4 years at this point. When you first started talking about it, it wasn't obvious. It's now becoming more obvious if you're trying to. It's not completely obvious to everybody, but it's starting to become more obvious. Marketing has to educate everybody else too, because like we're all like, as employees of a business, you're watching what's happening. It's mm-hmm. like, why are they doing this stuff? Why is this different? Why are they putting these topics on? Why does this number over here went down a lot? It's like, is that good? Is that bad? What does it mean? And there's this big education, which I think is like, the job falls to marketing to both like understand it, respond, actually work in the new way, and then educate the people around you to some degree too, so they understand why things are the way they are. You know, like, do you want to talk about that, maybe the alligator graph a little bit and what that is?
Oh,
so that people understand that? Because I feel like there's a good example of this.
Yes. I do have a quick question though, going back to what you said about how did you hear about
that's what
us?
We're here for. Yeah.
Did you ever try the like putting in a fake option?
Yes. We
how'd that go?
What was the fake option?
I can't remember what it was.
A cruise.
Yeah.
Or like, a cruise.
Yeah, or like if it's influencer marketing, for instance, it's like this influencer and you name somebody who you've never done a campaign with, for instance, to see if people choose that.
Yeah. And randomizing it too, like randomizing the order of the list. The other big thing was putting other in and just having people put in text.
Mm-hmm. But wait, what's the benefit? I might be like very dumb in this moment, but what's the benefit of putting in like a fake one? Yeah.
Let's see how faulty attribution and how faulty people's memories are. Because if you see like, let's just say if like 20% of your customers or 10% or whatever choose the lie, you'd be like, oh, well, they're wrong. So I know that customers are wrong at least 10% of the time.
Yeah.
But where they heard, like, you know,
I think it's very much like it's old school marketing data, right? It's like doing surveys to understand this stuff that's like humans are imperfect, but at least directionally, if you can see, for example, a huge amount of our signups are word of mouth, huge, but way more than anybody thought. Mm. And that was actually great because I think it was like this recognition of like, hey, all these, when we do these wild things that are really remarkable, that are all designed to get you to actually remember, like it is showing up. And, you know, other inputs like the NPS, like I look at that, I'm like, I want the NPS to be really, really high. And I believe that if the NPS is really, really high and customers have an amazing experience, they're much more likely to tell other people when it does come up or if they switch jobs or whatever. And a lot of that shows up as word of mouth. And that's kind of an advantage because like if you can work on these things that are hard to manage and hard to measure, but actually have them functioning, then it becomes very hard to like unseat that.
Yeah.
Do you think that zero-click marketing, like content that comes from zero-click marketing, is better content or it's just content with different rules?
Oh, interesting. Well, I guess better is subjective, right?
We like that though.
I want to say it's better because what makes it better is maybe it's a fully fleshed thought. It's a full thesis statement, essentially, mm-hmm. putting into like LinkedIn, for instance. And it's an idea that can stand alone on its own where, you know, clicking is the additive, right? It's not required to learn more or fully understand something.
Yeah. It's interesting because I had this happen recently where like I was on LinkedIn, I saw somebody make a short video about the three layers of hooks in video. Hmm. I watched it, read the post, delivered full value. There was no like, click this link for part two or like, check out my website. You know, like it was none of that. It was just the full. I took notes on it. That was first of all, took notes. It was that good. And I followed her. I followed her on LinkedIn, which I like, I'm not a big, like, I love your content, I'm going to follow you. But it made me follow her. And it's purely because there was no friction. I could get it all there. I could stay in my LinkedIn feed and I got everything I needed. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I guess I'm describing that in a lot of detail because
yeah, for people who have never been on LinkedIn.
I'm describing it in a lot of detail because I feel like that is a version of zero click marketing that like,
yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
No, but I think that is the perfect example in terms of the person earned so much trust with you that you're like, you know what? If I follow them and I keep getting stuff like this, like I'm going to be happy to see this.
Like I was like, this feels like a class that I don't have to pay for.
Exactly.
Exactly. I think the best kind of zero click marketing is something like this where it gives people like you like, oh, I want to subscribe. I want more of this. It's going to help me. Yes, yes, yes. And it's helping somebody when they're in that stage of not ready to buy, which could be for a myriad of reasons, right? It could mm-hmm. be they don't have the money yet, right? Like, and so you take them on this journey of here's how you do this thing. Just you, just on your own. I'll walk you through. I'll give you everything I know. And it being that like when that, so that as that person learns from you, eventually when they're ready to buy, because maybe they've gotten a new job or they have the money for it, they can be like, oh, I'm going to buy from this person or I'm going to pay for her video editing services. Like, great. Right. Because a lot of times, like, I think people too underestimate the fact that a lot of people, most of us are lazy and we're not going to do the thing. So I think sometimes people get worried about, yeah, but if I tell everyone all my secrets or give away all the value, like they're not going to buy from me because they're just going to consume all my content. But I always say like, yeah, but we're lazy. Like, and I feel like video editing, well, for me, it's a good example because I don't like to do that. I barely know how to do that. It will take, if I took this video and had to edit out like one small thing, you bet that would take me like an hour to do. I don't want to do that. And I'm never doing it. No amount of YouTube classes will convince me to do it myself. So if someone wants to give me a bunch of like free advice on speaking better in video, emoting in a more compelling way, yes, give me all that advice. And then one day when I'm ready to buy, yes, I'm thinking of you first.
Right.
But it's also, and everything you're describing is like about a longer term relationship versus a short term one.
Yeah.
Which I think is the other reason why so many people struggle with this. Because they're like, I want money now. Like now. Like give it to me. I don't want to wait. Like, or we did a campaign in February. Did the campaign work? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is, a lot of this is like, well, I don't know how well it worked in February. But probably if we did it and it was really great by next February, like someone who came in this campaign probably saw many of the other things that we did and actually it worked really well. Yeah. But that is also where I think that like even business model, how the company is funded, all these other factors make it either easier or harder to do this.
That's so true. We also like, we allow for like longer term results in other aspects of our lives. Like, I don't think we like step into a kitchen and expect to cook for 1 minute and have a meal. Like maybe that's the microwave. I don't know. But, you know, we know it's going to take like at least 15, 20 minutes to get dinner on the table. And same thing with the gym. Like you don't walk in and think I'm going to leave here being 10 pounds lighter in 1 hour. Like you know that it's longer, but in marketing, We don't give ourselves that same permission. Why? Why? That's my question. Why?
Yeah. I mean, why is like, I think part of it is like, can we just pay people to do their jobs? Like, your job is to do the marketing. Great. That's part of it.
Yep.
There's a baseline of say, like, you already crossed that bar. And then on top of that, great, you brought in new customers. That's what you should be doing.
Yeah. I love that.
Wait, we should talk about the alligator graph that you brought up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. So the alligator graph, it's become, I think, a little bit of a meme in SEO circles, but it's the visual like phenomenon of rising impressions to your website and declining clicks. So it looks like the opening of an alligator's mouth. I was doing that with my hands as if you don't know what an alligator is.
No, but that was great. And I think for anyone listening, they appreciated that description.
Yeah.
But yeah, and like this is like one example of what's happening. And I think right where the impressions account is going way up in AI search in this case. But I think it's also true on social media, right? Like what we're saying is like, you're going to be hopefully getting tens of thousands of people to see something maybe a week, a month, like, and maybe this is much more than you're getting before because you're investing a lot more in it. But the amount of people who actually come to the website, probably a lot less than you would have gotten from the same amount of impressions before. But the people who come, much more connected, ready to go, like purchase at a higher rate, sign up at a higher rate, like stick around longer because that connection is so strong when they're coming, right? And I kind of feel like I see the alligator graph like all over the place for this reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
This might be a whole tangent, but it's making me think about like a retail clothing store, right? Like if you walk into Gap and you like look around, you don't buy anything. You looked around for a while.
You don't buy at Gap. We know. Yeah.
You do not shop at the Gap. No, I love the Gap. What? They've been killing it recently. Anyhow, do they count that as like a failure that I didn't buy anything? Or do they count that as a win that I came into the store at all?
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like it's probably the latter. Probably. But I don't know. Should we be counting the fact that they came into the store as a win, like in digital?
I think we should. I think we should. I mean, you know, if your impressions are like skyrocketing and you have zero customers, that's a big problem, right?
Yeah.
But I would also bet that that's not really a marketing problem. That's probably a business problem. That's also affecting marketing, you know, like,
or it's an ICP problem. I think you said this very well before, which is like, that's how that can happen. I think is like, you're making a ton of stuff for actually the wrong person.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, that doesn't connect. So is it like, you need to change your ICP, you need to change your product, or are you actually going after the wrong group?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like we should probably talk about AI stuff.
Let's do it.
We have to say AI at least three times in our podcast episode. So,
well, I'm really interested in this. And I mean, I'm not a machine learning person. I like just learned how to make a website last month.
Congratulations.
But, yeah. No, I can make websites. But something that people are talking about a lot is how to get mentioned, right? In the AI overviews, ChatGPT, all that stuff. So the thing that I don't keep track of like algorithmic changes day to day, because I think that's kind of a waste of time. I'm much more interested in understanding what's going to be durable in general for the next year or so. And so what I'm learning, and please tell me like if you think I'm wrong, what I'm learning about getting mentioned in the AI overviews, LLM tools, is you basically want to have really, really good digital PR. You know, like you want to get lots of mentions to your brand, ideally with your link somewhere. Even if people aren't clicking as much, the existence of the link is also providing to the web and to the robots the signals of who you are, what you do. And the other thing is that you also want to be mentioned in the context of topics or discussions that are relevant to you and your brand. You know, like you want to be mentioned in the right places, basically, and mentioned by the right people. The right people as defined by your customers, maybe reporters in your niche, co-opetition meaning like other companies or brands who probably share your audience, but are not creating a directly competing pool. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that over time helped influence AI. But there's also like just your own content, right? Like your blog content, because the bots, whatever, are crawling all of that, taking that into account. And the thing that Rand and I have been talking about is the importance of video in all this, and like making sure you have a video transcript, because, and Sylvie and I were talking about this, like, I don't think like ChatGPT can't watch a YouTube video for you. Is that right?
The only, like, Google can suck out the data from YouTube, but nobody else can. So if you want to show up in ChatGPT or Claude or Perplex or anything else, you have to have the transcript. That's why we have the LLM embed that takes the transcript and puts it in there, so that like when basically when your websites are being crawled, it can actually say, hey, this is a crawler, this is what this video is about. You can take the information, put it in there. But yeah, that's it's quite important. I was also smiling when you're talking too, because like you're talking about the importance of blogs. And I feel like we've heard so often like blogs are dead and useless. So it's like, oh, it turns out they actually still matter. Turns out publishing your own stuff still matters.
Yeah. But we can bring this back too to Sylvie's point about the video that she saw on LinkedIn that was helpful. Hopefully that creator is also publishing that video on YouTube or something, or in her blog.
Yeah.
Because when you start, because maybe like today you'll be like, wait, was it again? Maybe I'll ask you, like, what were those hooks? Yeah. You'll have to look it up.
Right.
Then you can search it.
Right.
Yeah. And then hopefully you'd find it on YouTube.
And I think that's the big difference from before all of this, is before you wanted one place, your canonical place that had the video. So you had to make a choice, or your blog post was like, oh, is it only on my site? Am I optimizing more for my traffic here? And I know I'm going to get less, but it's going to be like closer into my funnel, or it's going to be on YouTube, or it's like, and now it's basically like put everything everywhere and make it so that the right person can always find it. The right agent can always find it. It is available. And it is like, that is very, very, very different than the game we were playing before.
Totally. Yes. Very different. It's a whole new zero click game.
Totally.
And it's also, I'm thinking about stores again, right? It's like you have a flagship store.
Are you talking about Old Navy now, or are you still in Gap?
Sorry, Old Navy. You're not in this clothing analogy. No, but you have a flagship store. What are you going to not have a satellite store? Of course you're going to have you're going to have more satellite stores. You're going to have some of the same inventory in those stores that you have in your flagship.
Yeah. You're going to do pop-ups in other people's spaces. You get to borrow a little bit of their audience.
I love that. I love that. I feel like we could go all day on this. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's also changing. It's still changing so rapidly, which I find very exciting and frustrating, where I feel like I unlock, oh, this is what's really working on LinkedIn right now. It's like, oh, everything's upside down. Okay, if we weren't this focused on it, we wouldn't be able to correct and figure out what the new version of this is. So it is very much, it's interesting to see how everyone's trying to figure out how to navigate all of this when it's all zero click. It's all make great stuff, make remarkable things, and put it out into the world. But the way you put it out, where you put it out, is just changing so rapidly.
Yeah, it really is. It scares me too. I mean, and as I'm writing the book, like already I'm like, oh shoot, I have to go rewrite that section again for the second or third time. I'm like, oh no, it has really pushed me. You know, when I said I'm much more interested in the ideas that are durable, like it has really pushed me to think that way, because we do have a chapter on, you know, AI marketing. It's not super long, but like I'm reviewing it. I've edited that full chapter like 10 times because I want this to be like, it's fine to me if something is dated, right? Like in a couple years, but I don't want someone to read that chapter a year from today and be like, whoa, that is 0% true.
You know, this is reminding me too of one other thing we didn't talk about that I want to just get in here before we run out of time, which is we've kind of been, let's, with your example, talking about you, Rand, SparkToro, but like interchangeably a little bit, like we're putting this stuff out there. Well, do you say that I think you're putting it out there, Rand's putting it out there. I imagine some of the stuff is also on the SparkToro brand. And I think this has been a pretty interesting shift over the last few years of the importance of like the personal brands alongside the company brand. And as you were talking, it also made me think of the importance more of like sub brands for companies, where if you you know, as these algorithms try to figure out what's going on, it's like, well, if we have all these different tools at Wistia, but it's Wistia Record, Wistia Edit, Wistia Webinars, what actually shows up is pretty different because we're known for being video hosting for so long versus like if those have more branded terms, then it's actually easier to attach the right information to what those brands, the sub brands are. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering your take on this as someone who has built up a great personal brand and has also built up a great company brand. Like, how do you think about zero click marketing across all of this?
I'm still forming my opinion because I can already foresee how I'm going to run into issues this year. Like, oh, where should this thing live? Because for the most part, it has been easy for me to differentiate between my brand and the SparkToro brand. And even like what I recommend for Rand. I mean, Rand makes all his own stuff, but sometimes I'll chime in and be like, hey, you should do a post on this thing. So the way I had always approached it was like, SparkToro is, you know, we provide information, education, news about audience research, how to better understand your audience so you can do better marketing. And how that is different from the perspectives of me versus Rand, I tend to think of it as like, okay, Rand is the co-founder CEO. Okay, so it should be like, what is he seeing in the industry at large? Like, mm-hmm. what are some of the macroeconomic trends? Like, what's his big picture vision? And then for me as the marketer, I think of it as, okay, so what should marketers learn from what their CEO is thinking? So that's kind of been the differentiators. Like, Rand will have the big idea related to audience research. And then I will have the, so what? What's the next steps for marketers?
You're like extracting that and really diving deep on marketers.
Yeah. Like Rand will say the thing. He'll have the research. And then I will say, with this research, do you mean this? I think this. What do you think? And he's like, yeah, go write your own you know? he doesn't talk that way. But yeah, like he'll be, yeah.
That'd be cool if you go write your own. You'd be such a badass if you talked like that.
No, but they'll be like, you should totally write a blog post on that. And I'm like, great. So that becomes easy for me. And then from my separate personal brand, what I then might do is, how does that fit into my overall marketing philosophy? Like how I see the world, how I see audiences, the way I do my work. So that's just a more like personal version of things, but that's how I differentiate.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you have the clear differentiation and are thinking about it that way. Because I think this is where I think a lot of people are going to get hung up is like, I want to do this, but like, can I have really pointed takes on the company brand? Should I? When should I not? When should I comment on things? Versus like as an individual, you might find it very easy to go on a podcast and answer a question. And so that as the brand would be hard to answer. And so it sounds like you have those templates in your mind pretty clearly on what goes where. But I think that it just feels very important in like the zero click world to do that, right? To be really clear about what the different types of topics and advice and insight and behind the scenes are happening on the different channels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Amanda, this has been amazing. Yeah. It was so nice to meet you. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I was so excited to be here. I had been thinking of this show as like, oh, I want to pitch myself for their show one day.
What? I was like so scared to reach out to you. Well, not scared, but I was like, I really want her to say yes.
Sylvie's always pretty afraid though. You should know that. Like, is the gap going to be open today? I don't know.
Am I going to be stuck going to Old Navy? Yeah.
I have the last thing I want to go to Old Navy.
I don't want to go there.
I'm not going to buy anything. I'm just going to try it on. Amanda, where can people connect with you?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I'm most active there. You can send hate mail to my work account, amanda@sparktoro.com. You can do it in private. And then I guess hopefully check out my podcast, Zero Click Marketing. And then hopefully, because I'm asking now in public, Chris will join sometime.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah, yes, I'd love you it. Will. Of course. Thank you so much. This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's all for this week's episode of Talking Too Loud. Please subscribe, follow the channel on YouTube. If you want behind the scenes exclusive content, you can subscribe on Wistia.com. And otherwise, you can find Sylvie and I on LinkedIn.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia, hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.